Senate come to order.
Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Roll call for Wednesday, January 18th. Agar?
Present.
Anderson?
Here.
Anselmi Dalton?
Here.
Baldwin?
Here.
Barnard?
Excused.
Excused. Boner?
Here.
Bouchard?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case? Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Dockstetter?
Here.
Driscoll?
Excused.
Excused. Ellis?
Excused.
Excused. Emmerich?
Here.
Hastert?
Excused.
Excused. Hicks?
Here.
Kinski?
Here.
Landon?
Excused.
Meyer.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Nethercott. Pappas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Platern.
Here.
Wasserberger.
Here.
President Bebout.
Excused.
Excused. Ellis present.
Landon present.
Landon?
Here.
Wasserberger present. I think I got everyone. 26 present, 4 excused.
Prayer by Reverend Marston. Please go.
Yes, sir. Let us bow our heads in prayer. Our Lord in heaven, creator of all things seen and unseen, we ask that you might be with these men and women on this day who have been given responsibilities for others and to others. Our Lord, we ask that you can be with them to bless them, that they may give their burdens to you, that they may look to you, because your yoke is easy and your burden is light. And our Lord, as they go through this day, may they know that they walk with you. For these things we pray through Jesus Christ. Amen. And amen.
Join me in the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Stay long.
Doctor for the day is Ron Malm. Really missing this. Doctor for the day is Dr. Ron Malm. Is he here? I don't see him. The nurse for the day is Beth Marston. Thank you for being here. I wonder if the minister and the nurse of the day are kind of related. Yeah, that's my thought. Same last name. Astrid Kinski. Today in Wyoming history, in 1890, the editor of the Rollins newspaper said unmarried men should be taxed $2.50. So moved. Is that a motion? Yes. Senator Kinski.
How taxing was it to be a married man at the time?
He figured you're already paying that tax. Bills on second reading. Senate File 34. Reading clerk, please read.
Senate File 34, Student Personal Digital Information Protection Act.
Senate File 34 has no amendments. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so moved. Senate File 35.
Point of order.
It is so ordered. Senate File 35.
Senate File 35, Virtual Education.
Senate File 35, having read two separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 42.
Senate File 42, Opiate Overdose Emergency Treatment.
Senate File 42, having read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 62.
Senate File 62, Telepharmacy Amendments.
Senate File 62, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 78.
Senate File 78, Federal Natural Resource Policy Account.
Senate File 78, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, seeing no objections? It is so ordered. Senate File 81.
Senate File 81, Circuit Court Judge Salaries.
Senate File 81, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Seeing no objections, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
You should ask. Yes, I do have a consent list. Mr. Vice President, I move third reading consent list, which is as follows. Senate File 6, Radioactive Waste Storage Facilities Amendments. Senate File 10, County Boards of Equalization. Senate File 29, Legislative Employees. Senate File 37, Education Hathaway Scholarship Program 2. Senate File 67, CHIP Program Amendments, Senate File 69, Small Employer Health Reinsurance Program Amendments, Senate Joint Resolution 2, Federal Land and Solar Energy Revenue State Share.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Would any member like any of these bills removed? Senator Scott?
Mr. Vice President, the Senate File 67, CHIP Programs Amendments, I'd like that removed from the consent list. And, Mr. Vice President, I would request that be laid back one day. We're working on amendments on that.
Okay. Senate File 67, the CHIP Program Amendments. Seeing no objections, it shall be laid back for one more day. Is that all that needs to be removed? So the consent list is Senate File 6, Radioactive Waste Storage Facilities Amendment, Senate File 10, County Board of Equalization, Senate File 29, Legislative Employees, Senate File 37, Education Hathaway Scholarships Program 2, Senate File 69, Small Employer Health Reinsurance Program Amendments, Senate Joint Resolution 2, Federal Land, Wind, and Solar Energy Revenue State Share. Will the clerk please call the roll?
On the consent list, Agar?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Bouchard?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll? Ellis?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Q? Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Moniz?
Aye.
Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Bebout excused. On the consent list, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 6, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 6, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 10, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 10, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 29, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 29, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 37, are there any changes? Case aye to no. Closing vote. Meyer, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Please stand and state your name.
Bouchard,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 37, 25 aye, 4 no, 1 excused. Senate File 69, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 69, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate Joint Resolution 2. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate Joint Resolution 2, 29 aye, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 6, Radioactive Waste Storage Facilities Amendment, Senate File 10, County Boards of Equalization, Senate File 29, Legislative Employees, Senate File 37, Education Hathaway Scholarships Program 2, Senate File 69, Small Employer Health Reinsurance Program Amendments, and Senate Joint Resolution 2, Federal Land, Wind, and Solar Energy Revenue State Share have passed the Senate. Senate File, get this correct, Senate File 2. Will the reading clerk please read in the Senate File?
Senate File 2, Legislative Appropriations, an act relating to appropriations for the legislature, sponsored by the Management Council.
Senate File 2 has an amendment. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, to do my best impression of a legislator that came before me, I'm going to start off with, all right, folks. We rushed through Senate File 2, and we rushed through an amendment without any debate in the last discussion that we had on it in second reading. And it needs a little bit more discussion to look at what this actually does, how it affects the outcome of the budget, and perhaps we've lacked the opportunity to have input from those members that were off the floor at the time. So I move third reading amendment number one to Senate File 2, ask the body for favorable consideration. And all this amendment does is to repeal the second reading amendment number one that we put on in our last discussion. Mr. Vice President, what that amendment did, as you may recall, is go on to page two and change the value for our for our session mileage and per diem, recalculating that from $934,768 to $869,469 to eliminate the per diem for those members that are not traveling. Now, that might seem intuitive that that's a reasonable consideration, Mr. Vice President, but I'll say that there was no debate on something that has stood for at least 30 years to the best of our understanding and probably deserves a little bit of debate as policy. Furthermore, Mr. Vice President, it's a statutory requirement that that amount of money be paid. If the body looks at 28.1.102, paragraph D, there's an indication that members of the legislature shall be paid salary and per diem for each calendar day from the first legislative working day of each session through and including the last legislative working day of each session. It does not talk about where you are or who you are. It is a statutory requirement. So the net effect of the amendment we put on second reading was not that those members would not be paid. They will all still be paid. LSO will cut checks to each of them, but the budget will be decreased. So when you look at the contingency funds that you see on page, where's my contingency fund? It is on page 5, section 8, paragraph A, the special contingency. The money that was reduced on this line item 16, on line 16, would simply be taken out of the contingency fund and all of the payments would be made. So there is no policy change. It's just a cut of the budget that would then have to come out of contingency because statute has not changed, and that statute requires that all of the members, regardless of where they're located, receive full per diem during the legislative session. Mr. Vice President, I don't think that was clear to the body when we voted on it last time, that it was not going to change the policy, but would simply be a reconfiguration of the budget, taking it out of another pool. I would ask the body to revisit that consideration from last time, adopt this amendment to reverse that. And, Mr. Vice President, if we want to make that policy change, as a body, we can certainly do that, but we will need legislation to do that, to amend statute, rather than just do it through this budget item. It is not possible within this budget to make that amendment. Mr. Vice President, that's the amendment. It's just to take things back. We can certainly have this discussion. It's a very valid discussion. I appreciate my good colleague raising this once again, and I think there is a lot to debate and discuss. But the amendment does not achieve the objective that is intended, that I believe the body thought it was voting on last time. And I wanted to remind the body of exactly what would happen and encourage the body to reverse that decision, possibly revisit it later. But I'd encourage the body to adopt this third reading amendment number one to Senate File 2.
Further discussion on the amendment. Further discussion, Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I really do appreciate the good senator bringing this amendment, and so we can actually have this discussion, which I don't feel that we did have yesterday, Mr. Vice President. I would point out that my amendment did not reduce the level to zero. My level reduced the level of Cheyenne per diem for legislators that live in Cheyenne during the session. I mean, we all live in Cheyenne, but actually have their residence in Cheyenne to 25% of the per diem, which is the same amount that all of you are entitled to when a meeting is held in your hometown. an interim meeting is held in your hometown. Now, there are legislators that decline the per diem, saying, well, I'm in my hometown, I sleep in my own bed, I can go home for lunch, perhaps yes or no, but that's up to individual legislators. It did not cut it to zero. It only cut it to the same amount that everyone else in this chamber gets for meetings in their hometown. Whether or not we can do this in this bill, I would disagree with my colleague, Mr. Vice Chairman, but it requires subsequent amendment. The magic word, notwithstanding, is always a very good one, and you could add some more explanation of what you're trying to achieve. And, of course, it could be done irregardless of the statute, even in session law, Mr. Chairman. So, but with that, I think you should vote it up or vote it down. But it really is a question, okay? Is this a fair situation? And that we're all elected to serve the office, and the effect of our policy is that some people actually paid more than others. The IRS recognizes that you're paid more if your residence is in Cheyenne. That's why the per diem is taxable. But it's a policy question, and I've been waiting 20 years to bring it. So this was a wonderful opportunity, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much, my good colleague from 49 miles away, but actually, when you actually do the map to his house, it's more than 50 miles away from Cheyenne. And he's in town.
Thank you. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm for the amendment. I think everybody's situation is different. We have an ability to opt out right now. You could tell LSO we want to opt out of that. Some legislators are retired and are doing fine. Some legislators are working off the job, and some are getting reimbursed, some aren't. Some are here on their own dime, and even those that are locally, if they're off their job and not getting any of the current reimbursement, then it is kind of an imposition on them to do this. I think it's so little served here, salary, per diems, and whatnot. Yes, they're at home, but if they're cut off from their resources, I think this is still just leaving it as an opt-out provision would be the better way to go. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President, let me just read the amendment that we're seeking to remove. It that we passed yesterday. It says, page 2, line 16, delete 934768, insert 869469. Mr. Vice President, and maybe somebody can explain to me if I'm wrong, it looks to me like that's just a simple budget cut to the line item. I have no doubt that it was calculated the way the sponsor of the amendment has described it to us, but I don't think it has the practical effect of reducing the per diem. If there was a footnote on there that said that that's what was happening, then I would think it would have that effect. But I'm afraid, as the amendment was written and passed yesterday, that its practical effect will not be as was described yesterday, but will simply be a budget cut that then would have to come out of the contingency fund. So I do think that we probably need to pass today's amendment, because I don't think the second reading amendment achieved what was intended. I think it just achieved a budget cut.
Further discussion, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Well, I guess with that last explanation, if that's the case, I think that maybe we should lay this back for a day, make sure that the amendments or the intent might be properly expressed and
Senator Meyer, is that a motion?
Yes, I would ask to lay it back without objection.
Are you withdrawing your amendment? No. I have a motion to lay back, which is sets precedence over your amendment motion.
It's in order.
Point of order.
It's in order.
It's an order.
The ruling from the Meyer.
Yeah.
Senator Rothfuss, would you like the floor?
President, if we lay it back at this stage, there's no action taken on the amendment, so the amendment would still have standing when we come back. It would be reintroduced. We would redebate it, and I find that acceptable. I believe it's in order to lay it back at this point without answer of the question. It comes back, and we would reinitiate it. That's my interpretation. As long as there's no objection, I would be perfectly satisfied with laying it back.
Seeing no objection, Senate file 0002 will be laid back until for one day, till tomorrow.
So do you have that at home? Okay.
Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 32, which has an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
The Senate File 32, Peace Officer Recordings, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to public records.
It has an amendment, and Senator Rothfuss, would you like to explain this?
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, I move third reading amendment number one to Senate File 32 and ask the body for favorable consideration. Mr. Vice President, the Judiciary Committee did excellent work, and there's no question about it, I'm serious, the excellent work on refining the legislation that came out of the Digital Information Privacy Task Force and bringing that forward, working with the stakeholders to improve the legislation. But there were a couple of points after amended that those of us on the Digital Information Privacy Task Force wanted stressed in the language. So this proposed amendment has two minor modifications to the legislation as it stands amended from the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 that I would like to bring to the body's attention for consideration as policy options that the body could choose. Again, Mr. Vice President, just to be clear, I am perfectly supportive of the legislation as it currently stands, unamended. The concepts that we'll look at here, I feel strengthen the legislation a little bit, and I'll try and elucidate how those changes would affect the outcome. You see, it's a replace amendment, but most of the language stands intact. And the changes are a little bit from structural standpoint. You see on lines 8 and 9, information obtained through a peace officer recording provided that. Now remember, this is under the D provision, so this is shall be denied. We're in the shall be denied section of the Public Records Act, and that information shall be denied provided that the A provision, the custodian shall allow the right of inspection, which is similar to the language previously, but then we broke it into Romanettes here to clarify. The first point being to law enforcement personnel or public agencies for the purpose of conducting official business, that's unchanged. The second point, to the person of interest except as provided in paragraph B, Romanette 1 of this section, that is a change. As it currently stands with the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, you have a circumstance where the agency, the law enforcement agency, may allow access or inspection to a person of interest. So if you're on the video, it's up to the law enforcement agency to make the decision of whether you can see the video. The task force had decided that that individual should be able to have access to seeing, inspecting the video. So this changes it to a shall, but the second half of the sentence, except as provided in paragraph B, Romanette 1, means that denial may occur by the law enforcement agency if there is a special law enforcement interest, an ongoing investigation or something else relevant along those lines. So it's language that's more similar to providing a beginning of a shall allow those that are on the tape to inspect, but they may deny if there's some type of ongoing investigation. So that's change number one. Mr. Vice President, the second is explicit on upon a court order finding that inspection would further a compelling public interest. That is as opposed to the language as it currently stands under the A paragraph or pursuant to a court order. Explicitly saying that there shall be a right allowed for this compelling public interest sets a standard for interpretation for the courts, and that was something that was heavily discussed on the task force, trying to make sure that the court would be trying to protect the privacy of the information unless there was some compelling public interest and justification. There is reverse language elsewhere in the Public Records Act, which talks about a public harm or a harm to the public good or public interest. We talked about mirroring that, but the reverse of it seemed a stronger statement. Mr. Chairman, the rest of the language on the B paragraph is identical to what we have now. So it is just those two changes, strengthening those two points, that this amendment would do. Otherwise, it's certainly excellent work, and I appreciate the body's favorable consideration for these minor variations that are more consistent, I think, with the spirit that we arrived at through the task force work during the interim. And I'd ask the body for favorable consideration on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 32.
Further discussion on the amendment? Further discussion? Question being called. Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, fellow senators, I'd like to thank the good senator from Albany County for the good work that the Judiciary Committee has done on this particular bill and amendment. Again, I think for the third time, I would like to reiterate that it was the collaboration and cooperation of the civil liberties groups, the press association groups, and law enforcement that they provided the language that the person of interest may receive the audio recording at the discretion of law enforcement. That was their wish and their intent. So it's my position that may language needs to stay in place, and that's why this amendment is inappropriate. But further expounding on the ramifications of if the shall terminology stays in place, it's quite possible that when you're dealing with... Let me just back up a little bit. One of the concerns that was brought forth to the committee was from the domestic violence groups for how many victims of domestic violence don't like to be put on video, or how potentially this video could be used against them or these audio recordings by their perpetrator. So frequently law enforcement is called to a domestic violence call where they go to the party's home or residence where both parties are there, both the perpetrator and the victim, and they're both in the video, or they're both in the audio recording. Who then is the person of interest? And if it could be the suspect, it could be the perpetrator, and it may be that criminal charges don't come out of that. And so that provision in paragraph B, subsection I of the statute wouldn't apply. Yet the perpetrator or the victimizer could still get that information and use it against the victim, much to their disadvantage. Another way that this could be abused is really a chilling effect on law enforcement, where they become so overwhelmingly concerned about how these video and audio recordings can be used against them. For example, a simple traffic stop where an individual feels like they've been mistreated by law enforcement during the traffic stop, they get a copy of the video and then proceed to put that on social media with the law enforcement officer's name, contact information, and all of a sudden this particular law enforcement officer becomes a subject of a public outcry and a social media chaos, quite frankly, which isn't fair to the officer and or to law enforcement of the communities for which they serve. So for that reason, I stand against the amendment and feel it's inappropriate.
Further discussion on the amendment? Yes. Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for the amendment, I've had the... I don't know if the right way to put this, but I've had to look at police video, and we've had to request police video. And as we tighten those restrictions up, where the person of interest has a hard time getting those videos, it puts them in a position, possibly, of being a victim. And I don't think that we want to be, of course, friendly to the other people who could be victimized, but at the same time, we don't want to use be scared because we're of one group of people, and we take the rights away from other people. So I really urge the body to adopt this amendment. We're all about protecting victims, but it's only 8% of police officers that ever this video is used against them are ever found guilty. Police video actually exonerates a large percentage of police that are victimized by people on the Internet. Thank you.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment. As was stated earlier, it's fairly unusual when the parties that are interested, that live with the language of the law every day in their profession or with people they represent, all agree on language. The bill as it stands now without this amendment is the language that all these groups agreed on and came together to support. And there were all kinds of interesting statements of support from one individual saying he would wear a dress and prance around. And I'll just declare that was the media. He was so supportive of this, and that's unusual when you get those kind of people all coming together to support language. This is it appears to be minor, but it's a significant change. I'd encourage us to oppose this amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Case.
Mr. Vice President, thank you very much. I rise in support of the amendment, Mr. Vice President. You can see my name's on it. I also served on the task force that spent a lot of time developing the efforts and moving this forward. Mr. Vice President, I'm always suspicious when everybody gets together at the table and ends up agreeing on what is the public interest when they all have their own pieces of that public interest. This is the amendment that I think strikes the right balance, Mr. President. You can see the balance between when they shall release the information, which the most important one in my mind is on a court order finding the inspection would further compelling public interest. That's very, very important to me. And then also has the may under certain circumstances, Mr. Vice President. It is a delicate balancing act. Remember, there's some folks who think all videos, all circumstances should be released. And we looked at that and said, well, there's a lot of thought that goes into it. And we're hearing articulation that video should maybe never be released. So this is the right method. And the fact that other folks are going to have to think about it a little bit more and then come back to the table as it moves through the journey in this capital is a good thing, Mr. Vice President, on and for the amendment.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, on and against the amendment, and probably going to be on and against the bill, and I'm going to explain why. So if you go to the original bill that came out of the task force, it's a paragraph. And the task force took several meetings, worked this bill several times, and then all of a sudden we get here to the legislature and we introduce a whole new concept with a whole new page. And the concept that came out of the task force that you had a court protection. It was a shall. The court shall do this. And this new concept that's completely brought into now is the custodian of those records. And so there's two disparities. What came out of the task force and what came out of this bill through this collaborative group that come to us. And now we're actually expounding this even beyond the second concept as now we're enrolling this thing. So my concern is as we continue to go down this road and amend this bill, it doesn't look like anything that came out of the task force. And I just keep worrying that maybe we're just taking too big of a bite all at one time. Let's look at what the task force did, try to live within those means before we continue to amend this bill to do something that we don't have any idea what the long-term ramifications of this is when we haven't even taken the baby step. It's the bill that came out of the task force. I've got some real concerns with the amendment. I've got concerns with the bill as it was amended in the Judiciary Committee, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the amendment before the sponsor takes his second. Senator Nethercott, for your second time.
I just want to clarify for the body again, which I believe I've done historically, even with the May language against a person of interest, if that record is denied, the statutes still allow for them to seek a court order to gain access to that footage. So it's not a bar at the complete discretion of law enforcement. If once it is denied, any public record is denied, the person seeking that public record can petition the court. So I want to make sure that the body is aware of that remedy that is currently available in law. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, I just a question for the sponsors when they rise for their second and last time. I just want to make sure I'm understanding the hypothetical that I would put forth is this. I'm at my house. An officer comes to the door. He's wearing a body camera. We have a discussion. Nothing comes of it. The next day, I think, I wonder what was on that video. There's no ongoing criminal investigation. As I understand this amendment, I would be able to go down and to the police station and say, I want to see that video that was taken last night, and they have to show it to me. I just want to make sure I'm understanding what I'm voting on, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Burchard, for your second time.
Yeah, and I think that, Mr. President or Vice President, I think that's the at the heart of this is that does anyone in this room want to go ask for special permission to see a video of themselves if you were the special interest, if you were that party? And I think that's what this is right here. I mean, I think we all have a right to see the video that police capture on us, you know, if you're the individual in question. That's it. Thank you.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Rothfuss, your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, for my second time on and for the amendment, and I appreciate the discussion, and I appreciate the opportunity to kind of get into the weeds here and go through some of the nuances. Again, it's a great piece of legislation either way. I think this amendment strengthens it and to address some of the concerns that were raised. First of all, my good friend from Sheridan, that basically is the case as described, where if a law enforcement officer walks up to the door, there's no ongoing investigation, and you wanted to go request inspection of that record, you would be entitled to request inspection of it. Inspection is something that is not specifically defined as release in statute. Inspection in statute is something that is defined through rules and regulations of that agency. Law enforcement does not necessarily feel that inspection always means release. So if you were to come down, good senator, and ask to see the video, they can show you the video. It doesn't mean they're handing you the CD and allowing you to post it on the internet. And the important aspect of that is that it gets to some of the concerns that we heard. If there's a required inspection opportunity and you have assault or violence cases or a civil disturbance, it would allow for that inspection. If you wanted release, again, you could take the court order, something along those lines. If we're talking about the remedy aspect, the concept of the remedy is reversible. It's just where we put the preponderance. In other words, if law enforcement under this proposed amendment doesn't want to release inspection, they have other grounds that they could deny on, that's going to be an existing investigation, that B Romanet 1. Otherwise, they'd be hard-pressed to really justify that if there's not an ongoing investigation. But even if they had another reason, they could deny and then go to court and have the court decide. So it really is just where you place that burden of proof. Is it a burden on release so that the individual who wants to see the images captured of them has to go get the court order? Or is it the law enforcement that would have to get a court order to preclude release or inspection of that public record? And that's the difference, Mr. Chairman. It really is, it's close. And I recognize the fact that we came to an agreement, and I understand why the Judiciary Committee wants to protect that agreement. But, Mr. Vice President, I can tell you as well that having worked with these communities over the last year on this legislation, law enforcement has absolutely no problem with this changed approach. As a matter of fact, they supported that strongly in the beginning, and you'll see that that's consistent with the original phrasing as drafted by the Digital Information Privacy Task Force. It was not contentious between those that represent the press and those that represent law enforcement. Both were comfortable with it. This was a change that really was made coming out of the Judiciary Committee, and based on my experience, based on my recollection of testimony, it seems that it would not be contentious with either the law enforcement or the press association. Mr. Vice President, it's a policy decision. It really is just where we draw the line. Vote it up or vote it down, as my good friend from Lander would say, but I feel that it's stronger with this in place than without it. We've spent over a year working on this legislation, and I think this is a good product to send over to the other chamber. Mr. Vice President, with that, I'd ask for the body's favorable consideration. Thank you.
Senator Christensen, we don't
that was the second.
Stand up after his second time. No, well, I can't allow this at this time. Yeah, sorry about that. Senator Case. You can,
with regard to the, I think any member has the right to speak for the second time. It is considered very, it's a considered impolite. And it's
impolite.
Against the tenor and the decorum.
It's actually not prohibited in our rules, but we don't usually go up. So, Senator Christensen, I can allow you to do it then. It's not written in our rules.
Mr. Chairman, acknowledging our customs and asking for this second time to speak, I would also, if it's a pleasure of the chair, suggest that the sponsor could respond if he would like, but that will be your call. I just wanted to do a correction here to let people know when we're talking about this amendment on line 11, when it says the custodian shall allow the right of inspection, it's been stated that inspection is to view. But when we go to the statutes, 16-4202-D, an agency shall provide an electronic record in alternative formats unless doing so is impractical or impossible. And what that means is it's a disk. It's not just a view. It's to take that record and walk away with it. And so this is where, for example, the domestic violence people had concerns that a suspect could get a hold of that record and take it with them to the detriment of the victim. A very significant issue.
Senator Rothfuss, would you like a second time at this? A third time, I should say.
Mr. Vice President. First of all, I appreciate the opportunity to speak for the third time on this topic and thank the body for that opportunity. Second of all, elsewhere in that statute, which I was just trying to pull up, but the Internet's not being cooperative, it explicitly states that agencies, in implementing their public records requests, are entitled to develop rules and regulations for what that inspection means. So while there is the additional language elsewhere regarding electronic distributions, there is no implication in that aspect of the statute that you have to release it, because that's going to be subject to the rules and regulations as developed. So if you are releasing, you are required to release in an electronic format. If you are providing inspection, there is no such inclination or requirement within that statute. Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I would encourage the body to support this. Thank you.
And thanks to Senator Case for straightening me out on that. Appreciate that. So we're now voting on Senate third reading, Amendment 1 to Senate File 32. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
Once again, the chair is in doubt. Those in favor of third reading, Amendment number 1 to Senate File 32, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Third reading, Amendment 1, the Senate File 32 has failed. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion? Senator Scott?
Mr. Vice President, we've debated this bill up and down. We've amended it. We've attempted to amend it. And I find myself in a quandary, Mr. Vice President. I'm not fully satisfied with the current state of the bill. We aren't going to amend it any further. We're going to vote on it. I don't know that we could improve it if we amended it any further. And so I ask a question because I've become confused. What is the state, and I'm trying to make a decision whether to vote for the bill or not, what is the state of the law in this area if the bill does not pass?
Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Mr. Vice President, and our good senator that attended college with my daughter, I'd like to address your question. The state of the law, if this doesn't pass, is it's ambiguous for law enforcement and also for the victims. As we've stated over and over again, it's pretty rare to have the kumbaya moment between the ACLU, the police officers, and everyone who testified at our Judiciary Committee meeting. And so for this reason, I would stand for the bill and ask you to support the bill.
Thank you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. The tall senator from the Toronto asked whether we could actually fix this if it went forward. And I think if you take the third reading amendment that was offered and rather than say inspect, just say view, so there's no ambiguity in what was meant, and we wouldn't have that discussion about dissemination of any electronic record going out to the internet or any place else, then I think that would probably get us to that sweet spot where we're thinking. And I guess it would be up to anybody that's got that burning desire to once again lay it back and do it. I'm not offering that motion, but I think that would fix the problems that we had on the last amendment and the concerns that people had as far as that distribution and those that were in domestic violence situations or were victims. They would know that it couldn't be disseminated. They wouldn't have to relive that on the internet, and it would be simply protecting the personal rights of the individual to know what's on a recording if that was changed from inspection to view.
Thank you. Further discussion, Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, I'll attempt to answer my good friend, the senator from Bay Creek's question, although I am not a lawyer, I just play one. The policy that we adopted at the city when I was mayor was that we treated recordings like we would any document in the file, and then it was releasable or not releasable under the same circumstances as a piece of paper in a file. With the exception that because it was electronic form, we also took the position that just as under the law, if I've got to pay somebody to go retrieve a bunch of information out of the computers, I charged people $45 an hour to go start looking at video recordings and pulling them out. The rationale for the bill we heard from law enforcement is that because the power of audio and video is so awesome, thus the addictive properties of television and movies, that when you move beyond simply audio recordings to video recordings with sound, that law enforcement agencies are reluctant to adopt these body cameras. I am of divided feeling about this bill still. We worked it hard in judiciary, and I still don't quite know. And part of the reason is, having been a person of interest on a video that was not subject to a criminal investigation, I have a vested interest in these things being freely releasable, one. Two, we had an incident in a city to the north of us not too long ago where law enforcement pulled over a woman who was suspected of intoxicated driving. She said, "You don't even need to test me. Just take me in. I'm drunk." And they took her home. And the media didn't pick up on it. Nobody picked up on it. But some guy heard a rumor. He went down, and he had a right to get that video recording, and the whole story was broken open. Here he'd have to go to court. And that concerns me a great deal that somebody, a citizen, let alone the media, but a citizen has to go to court for those kind of circumstances. And so on balance, I still am a bit undecided on the bill, but I look forward to the debate and see where we end up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill, we've had a robust discussion and amendments, but I want you to remember why this bill came forward, why this topic was worked on in the interim, why it ended up coming from the task force to judiciary. It's because law enforcement has a concern. The public has a concern. Without this bill, we risk losing a tool that protects the public, protects law enforcement, and is that next witness. It's been expressed over and over that this is a tipping point bill, that without some sideboards, there are agencies in Wyoming that are either looking at not adopting cameras or turning them off because of both the control of the material but also the cost of dealing with it without any control. And so let's remember why this all started and why it's so important. And I want to express my appreciation to the task force and the time they put into it to flesh this out. It was never an easy question, but it's an important question, and this is an important bill.
Thank you. Further discussion on the bill? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I'd ask without objection that the bill be laid back to remedy the concern over the amendment and draft new amendments, have it laid back one day.
Without objection, the bill will be laid, Senate File 32 will be laid back for one day. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 63. The reading clerk, please read it in.
Senate File 63, Department of Family Services Statutory Amendments, an act relating to the Department of Family Services, sponsored by the Labor Committee.
63 does have an amendment. Senator Nethercott.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee to move the amendment on its first reading, on its first amendment, third reading. I brought this issue to the attention of the body previously. This amendment addresses page 4, line 1, and so the purpose of this bill, or one of the benefits of this bill, is that it allows for entities who employ individuals who are working with vulnerable populations to request a report from the Department of Family Services to determine if an individual, a prospective employee, and I present to you a current employee, has been the subject of an investigation that's been substantiated. The current legislation prohibits or limits, I believe unintentionally, the use of that particular report from the Department of Family Services to be applicable only to prospective employees, versus also being applicable to current employees. So the net effect of that is, if you have a current employee who has a report of abuse against a vulnerable person or child, and that is substantiated, you can't use that report or information as part of your determination for their continued employment. And so I just want to clean up this particular bill to add language that the purpose for that report is for the screening of prospective employees as well as current employees. And that is found in both the that same logic and rationale is found also on page 8, line 17, when we're dealing with the two different statutory sections here for children and vulnerable adults. I ask for a favorable vote on the amendment and welcome any questions. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President, this is in the Labor Committee's bill on the Family Services, the statutory amendments. And frankly, this is in a part of the bill in which the Labor Committee is not expert. And it's in old language in the bill. This was included in there because the Family Services wanted the ability to respond to requests that came not directly from the employer, but where the employer had hired some agent to do their human resource work. That, excuse me, Mr. Vice President, that's becoming more common, and it further broadened the employers, as you can see on page 2, that can request this. I don't think that this is outside the title or changing the purpose of the bill, Mr. Chairman, to any degree that raises any constitutional questions. But I asked the Senate to think pretty seriously about this. We are making more and more use of these various background checks. And this isn't a criminal background check. This is a check of a registry for either people who are going to be working that might have complaints against them for child abuse in the one instance or elder abuse in the other. These checks are expensive. We had limited just prospective employees, I think probably on the theory that that was where the employer wouldn't know. And with current employees, they would know a good deal more about it, but you could still have an instance that happened away from the employment or away from where the organization requesting the checks has contact with it, so they might not know. And we are putting a significant burden on the agency and on employers and these voluntary organizations, on everybody concerned with these background checks. So there is some reason to say they ought to be limited. And Mr. Vice President, I rise really to say I really wonder if that's something we want to do in this bill at this time, as opposed to raising it as an issue that ought to be considered. And this issue was not considered in the Joint Interim Committee because it was a piece of old law which the department didn't seek to have changed, and we focused on the changes. So should we make this change right here and right now on third reading? Or should this really be a separate bill with consideration as to how much additional burden we were placing on who? I don't know. The Senate will have to make its judgment, but I did feel it incumbent to raise this to the Senate that there's a little more at stake here than just a simple cleanup.
Senator Nethercart, before your second time, this will not count against you. I failed to have the amendment read in, so would you move it again after he reads it in?
Yes.
Thank you.
Senate File 63, Third Reading Amendment, Number 1, Page 4, Line 1.
Senator Nethercott.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Vice President Abbott. To address the senators from Natrona County's...
No, you need to move the amendment.
Oh, I move the amendment.
Would you state it as third reading amendment number 1, Senate File 63?
Yes. I move the amendment, the first amendment to Senate File 63, and ask for your favorable consideration.
Okay, and then that'll
come. This is where I'm going to go.
Senate, third reading amendment number 1.
I had that before. Okay, the very first time, yeah. I move the third reading first amendment of Senate File 63.
Perfect. Thank you. And
thank
then
you.
Let me have anybody else that wants to speak before you take your second time. Senator Anderson?
Mr. Vice President, maybe just Maker could explain in her closing. It looks to me like on page 5 and page 8 that this report they're trying to get is on prospective employees, and then once they have the report done, they're qualified to What the heck? Screening, yeah, good argument. Anyway, it sounds like it's just for prospective employees to get on board. I don't know the application for a current employee to have this investigation. And the first one is for minors, and the second one is for adults. So I don't understand why we would need to have a screening again on current employees.
Anybody on the amendments? Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. President. Being on the committee, this is specifically for screening perspective, and there was a lot of talk about current employees, that there's a whole background on how they keep track of that and how they file complaints against them, and so I'm against the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment before the sponsor takes their second time? Seeing none, Senator Nethercott, do you want to take your second?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps my confusion comes from the language of the statute itself, and I will direct the body to the bottom of page 3, starting at lines 18, which says, the applicant or an agent on behalf of the applicant shall submit a fee of $10 and prove satisfactory to the state agency that the prospective or current employee or volunteer whose records are being checked consents to the release of the information to the applicant. So perhaps that's where I felt that the statutory provision applied to both current and prospective employees based on the current language of the statute.
Thank you. We're voting on, do you have more?
I do. I would also let the body know that based on the senator from Natrona County's recommendation, I did reach out to the department and notified them of this particular amendment, and there was no objections.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 63. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 63, first amendment, third reading amendment to number 1, Senate File 63 is passed. We are on the bill, Senate File 63. Are you ready for the question? Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger? Aye. President Bebout excused. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 aye, 1 excused.
Senate File 63, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 63 has passed the Senate. Next bill is Senate File 66. Will the clerk please read it in?
Senate File 66, Title 25, Payment Obligations, Federal Entities, an act relating to the hospitalization of mentally ill persons, sponsored by the Labor Committee.
We have the amendment read in, please. Senator Perkins, I assume you want the amendment read in.
Yes, please.
Senate File 66, Third Reading Amendment, Number 1, Page 2, Line 6.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I move Third Reading Amendment, Number 1, to Senate File 66 and ask the body to vote aye. Mr. Vice President, members, what we've got here is a little bit more of an amendment. The purpose of this is simply, you see there, is to provide a subrogation right. The purpose of that is keep in mind what we're doing is these folks under the bill have the health providers, hospitals and providers have the obligation to apply for payment from these other various third parties. It could be the VA, it could be any number of federal agencies, it could be private insurers, it could be any number of folks. And so ultimately, if they're not paid, or the sort of the period of time which we talked about today, which I think is amended, is now 4 months, that time passes, then the state goes ahead and pays under these the county or the state, in some cases both, pay their respective obligations to the hospital provider. In doing that, it would seem to me, much like your insurance policy provides, when they identify you and make a payment to you, they have the right then to subrogate or to go after the individuals who are obligated to pay. So there is no longer any incentive on behalf of the provider of the hospital to do it. They've now been paid either in full or in part by the county or the state. And so when the county or the state steps up and pays that, to the extent that it would be appropriate, they don't have to. There's nothing that says they have to do this. But then they would have that right. They step into the shoes of the person to whom has been paid for that payment. And that's all this is intended to do. At this point in time, it may not be, my understanding is only 50 to 60 or so a year that this happens on. But if we had a federal agency that has developed wrongfully were denying these things, it would give the state or the county the right to go back and seek payment at a later time, again at their option. The purpose of this is simply to make sure it's clear who's got the right to force or to seek reimbursement from those payees or payors when the state or the county stepped up and paid, and allows the county or the state to step into the shoes and pursue those rights if they deem that appropriate. Ask for your favorable consideration.
We're on third reading number one to Senate File 66 and Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I wanted to just point out, I think there's a mistake on the amendment. It says on page, on the third reading amendment, page, line one, it says page two. And if you go back to your second reading amendment, it says line one, page three. And I don't know how the body would like to address that, but I do want to point out that there is an error on that amendment. Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
Senator Perkins, since I don't have it out, the bill out itself, is that correct location?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, as I look at it, it should be page 3, line 6, not page 2, line 6. I don't know if that's, I think that's a clerical issue that just is corrected, because the actual amendment is into the previous amendment, which was the second reading amendment number 1, is my understanding.
Okay. We'll let a technical correction be made by LSO on that. They're no doubt listening to us. Senator Scott. Thank you, Senator Ellis.
Mr. Vice President, and my compliments to the previous senator for catching that technical defect, and I think it's being handled entirely appropriately. I would say I think this amendment strengthens the bill. It was the intent of the bill, as it came to you from the Joint Interim Committee, was really focused on getting these federal agencies that are potentially liable billed in the first place. And this merely strengthens our ability to get any collections. And I urge the Senate to adopt it. I would caution you that it, of necessity, is optional with the state whether it's worthwhile pursuing these. And given the nature of the federal agencies involved, it may well be that our Attorney General will say it isn't worth the effort to go get them. That's simply a monetary calculation. But it does strengthen the bill. Just don't anybody be under any illusions we're solving a major portion of our Title 25 problems with this bill, even as amended.
Thank you. Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, we're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 66. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File, or third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 66 has passed the Senate. has passed. We're on the bill. Any further discussion on Senate File 66? Senate File 66, having read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will take the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Von Fladen?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout excused. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 aye, 1 excused.
Senate File 66, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 66 has passed the Senate. And I do have an announcement. Members of the Senate, Julie Poppy, I think she's standing right back there to the right, is the Wyoming liaison from the National Conference of State Legislatures. We'll be here today to visit with legislators about the NCSL services. The Wyoming legislature pays dues to belong to NCSL, and the organization has a wealth of resources to help you with your legislative work. Ms. Poppy will be in the Senate lobby this morning. If you have any questions about NCSL services or requests for information, Julie would be happy to visit with you in the lobby. So there she is, Julie Poppy. Please see her out in the lobby. She's a great addition to this body. So thank you and welcome to the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business, consideration of bills on general files. Thank you. Do you have a motion?
I do. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. If you're ready, I'm ready too. Mr. Vice President, I move that the Senate resolve itself in committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That has passed. Senator Moniz.
That was not a very enthusiastic endorsement of that motion.
It really
wasn't.
I think it's more like this.
Not to take it personal. This committee of the whole, is that H-O-L-E or W-H-O-L-E?
H-O-L-E.
Yeah, committee of the whole.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Majority Floor Leader.
Can you turn my mic off, please? Thank you.
Didn't want us to focus on your conversation back there. Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 45. The reading clerk will read the Senate file. She hid it under my script. Let me restate that. The first file for our consideration is Senate File 36. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 36, Education, Leader Evaluation and Support, an Act Relating to Education, sponsored by the Select Committee on Statewide Educational Accountability. was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger, Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Coe.
The whole rights report do so with the do pass recommendation on Senate File 36. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask if that be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 36, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 12.
Mr. Chairman, move that amendment and defer to Senator Wasserberger for an explanation of the amendment and the bill.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill comes to you as a result of the Select Committee on Accountability, which met numerous times over the interim. This is the small portion of that bill. The other bill is in the House right now and will be coming to us shortly. As you remember, the legislature has been demanding accountability from the school system. And we have gone through what we call phase one and phase two. This is actually phase two, and I'm going to briefly explain to you the bill and then the amendment, and if we can, Mr. Chairman, we will handle the amendment at that time.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Essentially, the bill takes out some things. If you remember, a couple of years ago, we had a bill that required a report for exceeding expectations and meets expectations, and you will see in this bill on page 3, line 7, where the only thing that a school district will have to do at this point is to those schools that are partially meeting expectations will have to have a plan, and that will be reviewed essentially of their leader evaluation system. And the change is that we also have that as a part of our superintendent evaluation, but also as all of our administrators. And if you remember a couple years ago, we had teachers as a part of the evaluation system, and that has been taken out. If you remember, those schools meeting partially meeting expectations will go through a statewide system of support as appointed by the state superintendent, and that's what we call SSOS. And that process is actually being done throughout our states. And if possible, Mr. Chairman, I would like to take up the standing committee amendment at this time.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, essentially what the standing committee amendment does is take out using test results for administrators. The committee passed this. It is a standing committee amendment. And having briefly explained that, that is the standing committee amendment.
Are there any questions on the standing committee amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 36, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 36 has passed. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are back on the bill. Mr. Chairman, so now we have essentially put in that superintendents will have an evaluation process, and that will be established by the State Board of Education, as will the rest of the administrators in the district. Teachers are out of that process. The district will be allowed to determine what the evaluation is for its own teachers. We do not have test results within that for teachers, administrators, and I believe that is essentially this bill.
Any questions? Seeing no questions. Oh. Senator Agar.
I just have a real quick question. I was on the phone this morning with two administrators and superintendents from my quite rural district. And my simple question is, are we just piling too many, in a time when we're expecting them to cut their budgets, are we piling too many regulations on our educators?
Senator Washburger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I believe that this particular bill on accountability, as compared to what accountability was a couple of years ago, is much easier. However, I will say that almost daily we take up another bill in the Education Committee that adds to that. But I think this is actually an easier, gentler, accountability-light bill.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow on to that, we have been taking pieces out of the accountability requirements probably for the last 2 years. This legislation eases a lot of the requirements that are currently in statute in ways that the Education Committee as well as the Education Accountability Select Committee feel still get the same objectives accomplished, still provide the same level of support and accountability statewide, but ease those restrictions. So to the good senator's concerns, it does exactly what we probably should be doing in a time of a budget downturn, easing up the restrictions, but doing them in the way that are most effective and useful for the state.
Chairman, Senator Kinski.
Ask my colleague from Campbell County or any other member of the select committee. By the definition of leaders, that includes the superintendent as well as each individual school principal.
Senator Washburger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the answer to that is yes, but it also includes your associate supes and those types of things. That would be me.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm getting a little concerned. I hear them saying it's accountability light. Are we in the process of dumbing down the whole accountability system so that it isn't going to get the job done? What are we really going to have left?
Senator Washburger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this day and age where we are returning to local control, I still believe that we have school boards out there that are pretty stringent on their requirements to their superintendent. We still have that piece. Ultimately, it will bring a more unified evaluation system statewide for our administrators. I do have concerns that school boards might be losing some local control as a part of this. And so I will try and draft an amendment that returns some local control within the parameters of this bill on second or third reading. But I do think that there's still a fair amount of evaluation in this process, at least in my school district. Every building principal has to present their test scores to my local school board, and then ultimately, as a result of that being done publicly at the school board meeting each month, those test scores are printed along with the press release that comes out in September of each school scores in the local newspaper. And so it's pretty standard within my district that test scores are a part of what they do, and the board looks at those for each and every school. But we're not saying that it's a part of the evaluation. The rest of the evaluation is based on school safety. It's based on instructional leadership. It's based on have you implemented the standards within your school. And then ultimately, at the end of the day, your test scores are discussed at the same time. So that is our evaluation system, and I think it's a good one. We can make it more stringent if you'd like, but you would need to bring an amendment to do that.
Any further questions? Is there a call for the question?
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole arises report that to do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 36 as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The file passes. Next Senate file for our Committee of the Whole is to be considered is Senate File 45. Would the reading clerk please read in the bill?
Senate File 45, Liquor Dispensing Rooms, an act relating to alcoholic beverages, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Nethercott, Pappas, Scott. Conflict, Senator Case. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a due pass motion on Senate file or due pass recommendation on Senate File 45, Liquor Dispensing Rooms. Mr. Chairman, I the Corporations Committee spent a great amount of time during the interim traveling to all the great watering holes around Wyoming and researching this bill. And actually, we didn't do that, Mr. Chairman, but I do have one of those great watering holes. I own part owner, and that's why I'm a conflict on the bill. And for discussion of the bill, I would ask you to yield to one of the great committee members, Senator Pappas.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I apologize to the body. I'm fighting a cold today, so I hope you can understand me. Hope I'm able to enunciate well enough. Anyhow, this bill, which is one that the Joint Corporations Committee worked as the good senator from Lander mentioned. Is a bill that is kind of a win-win. Everybody that worked on this bill, from the Liquor Association folks to the department to members who hold a liquor license, are all in favor of this legislation. It makes it easier to provide the goods and services that we in Wyoming really want. So let me lead you through the bill. This bill basically removes the restriction and fee on a number of types of dispensing rooms which alcoholic and malt beverages may be sold. And in doing so, it looks like a fairly lengthy bill. If you look at it, most of them are housekeeping changes. What we're basically doing for a lot of licenses, instead of a dispensing room, we're now going to allow for a licensed building. In other words, you don't necessarily have to have just a room where you dispense from. It could be anywhere in your building or adjacent to the building as well. So going through the bill, you'll see the first changes on page 3. Again, housekeeping, both of those. You'll see dispensing room removed and licensed building inserted in lines 2 and 20. Page 4, that happens again on line 13 and line 18. Page 5, page 5, line 5, this is again, the sales room is removed because we're licensing the building. Page 6, this is again a cleanup because instead of describing the place, describing the room, we're actually needing an address for the building. Page 7, This section 12.4.301 is sales by clubs, and so if you'll look at the changes on C, I do think we, I do believe we have a standing committee amendment.
You do.
Could I have it read in right now?
Yes, you can. With the Senate, with, read the amendment.
Senate File 45, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 7, line 15.
Thank you. I'd like to move that amendment.
Go ahead.
Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 45 basically adds the words on line 15.
Point of order.
Go ahead.
Yes, microphone. Could we at least, could we state the amendment? Instead of just saying I move that amendment, could you state I move amendment number first reading amendment? No, I didn't
do that.
I didn't think I heard. I said move the amendment.
Yes, I'd like to move the standing committee amendment 1 to Senate File 45.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So this amendment adds the words on line 15 after the word only. We're adding the words as approved by the legal licensing authority. This section, sales by clubs, allows a club holding a limited retail license may sell alcoholic beverages for consumption anywhere now in this license premise. But we're also giving the local licensing authority the ability to approve that requirement. Okay, on to page 8, both of these changes on here are housekeeping items. Change page 9, lines 14 through 18. This is basically the definition of room. So this is a new article. For the purpose of this section, room means as approved by the local licensing authority, a part of the inside of a building large enough for a person to enter, but not a cabinet, which is divided from other areas by walls and a doorway and has its own floor and ceiling. And again, that's needed. Again, in some licenses, a room is still there, for instance, as in the restaurant license. Okay, going on to page 10, line 15, that's a housekeeping item. Page 11, all of those items on line 3, 13, 17, and 21, all housekeeping. Going to page 12, if you look at line 13, we're striking 12.5.201. This specifies dispensing rooms, so it's being removed from the 24-hour malt beverage permit and catering permit license requirements. This basically makes the catering permit and the 24-hour permit the same. Line 20 is a housekeeping item, as well as page 13, line 2. One thing doesn't show a change here, but if you look at line 5 on page 13, it says licensed building. The actual statute right now says dispensing rooms, so that is actually a change. Article 2 now becomes licensed buildings. Section 12.5.201, this is really the meat of the bill here, the heart of the bill in line 15 through 20. This is really deleting the room requirements and fees for additional rooms. Right now in many of the licenses, if you want an additional location dispense beverage, you can, but you have to describe it. You have to pay two-thirds of the fee paid for the original license. All of that is going away. Right now, if we pass this legislation, you can sell within the building or an immediately adjacent fenced or enclosed area, again, approved by the local licensing authority. Okay, off to page 14. The changes that you see in 2 through 10 there, this was a limitation on how we could, on what could be sold in the licensed rooms. And since rooms are now gone, this language is not needed. Line 12, housekeeping item. Lines 16 through 23, there's no need for this language because there's no need to separate sales areas for on- and off-premise consumption now. Packaged liquor, basically packaged liquor and dispensing areas, no need to separate them. On page 15, you'll see lines 7 through 9. This is a section that allows sales from mini bars and hotel rooms. So we're deleting the need to pay an additional license fee for mini bars. On to page 16, lines 12 through 17. This is resort language. So they're not required to pay the fee as on. Can't read my writing here. We're talking about a resort license, there's really no need for the two subsections, the three subsections, A through C, of this section, because it's not required anymore. On to page 17, again, 2 through 4 is being deleted because it's not required. 13 through 18 is for golf clubs. Again, this is language that's not needed because of the changes we're making. Then we're off to page 18. Again, these are pretty much housekeeping items since we're not paying the fees anymore. 4 and 5 and line 10 through 12 are irrelevant. 13 is housekeeping. Line 22, this allows for the use of the facility for times when you're having a teen night, so there where there is no liquor available. So, again, cleaning up that language and get rid of the dispensing room. On to page 20. That's continuing language for that kind of team night idea. Lines 9 through 12, nothing in this act shall prohibit more than one liquor license holder to operate within the same building, provided that each licensee maintains distinct areas within the building. The issue was when we're licensing buildings, excuse me, you might have more than one, say in a strip mall, there might be a restaurant, and there might be one inn and a packaged liquor store in the other. So that's not prohibited since we're really looking at distinct areas within the building. So when we're talking building, we're really talking the by license holder. 18 is a line 18 is a housekeeping item. Page 20, line 5 is housekeeping. We are, then if you go on to line page 22, we're adding a new paragraph for off-premise sales. Enter or remain in an establishment that is primarily for an off-premise sales of alcoholic liquor or malt beverages, unless accompanied by a parent, spouse, or legal guardian who is 21 years of age or older. Additional language that's going to be required to this is the section for the sale or possession prohibited. Section 2 brings us down to Section 2, which is the repealers. The first one there is the definition of room. The second one is microbrewery and wineries. The third one is deals with UW. The fourth one is for public auditoriums. The fourth one is for the state fair. Fifth one is elimination of, again, of room requirement. The 12.5.203 is minors in a room, and 12.5.301 is drive-throughs. Anyhow, although all those are being repealed because they're not required anymore. And the effective date of this act or this legislation, if passed, will be July 1, 2017. So I know that was a lot, but I'd stand for questions.
Senator Pappas, we didn't vote on your standing committee amendment. Would you
like to
do so at that this time?
Mr. Chairman, point of order on the standing committee amendment. It sounded like the senator with the cold said legal licensing authority, and I believe it's written local licensing authority.
It does.
That's correct.
Any further discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 45, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 45 is passed. Any questions on the bill? Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I need to declare conflict before I vote again.
Okay. Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I applaud the efforts of the committee to remove, simplify some of the aspects of the liquor law. I was mayor for 10 years, and I'd get people in my office just mad about some of these requirements and trying to figure out how to apply them, thinking it was my doing, and I'd always give them the phone number of the Liquor Commission and tell them they had to work with Cheyenne on it. I applaud the effort then to give the local authorities a little bit more control over this. I particularly applaud the dispensing room requirement elimination. And that makes all the sense in the world to me. It was always an issue for retailers to figure out where the dispensing room began and end and how to structure their business to accommodate this dispensing room requirement. I wonder if the sponsor or member of the committee could point me to the specific provision of this that eliminates the dispensing room requirement for the restaurant. And that's a particular concern. I have a friend who's in the restaurant business in my hometown. He told me because of the restrictions of the dispensing room, he's poured out more wine than he's ever sold. It is really a hassle, this dispensing room requirement in the restaurants. And I look forward to being rid of it, and I hope that I can be point to right where it is. I saw in one particular section of interest where on page 9, subparagraph F, the dispensing room definition is beefed up, actually increased over what current administrative interpretation is. Over the years when the legislature, I think it was in 77 or 78, created restaurant liquor licenses, they put in a dispensing room requirement. Initially, the commission required you to have a room with walls and a ceiling and locked off from the rest of the restaurant. Over time, they relaxed on that. And basically, it's down to the point now, it's silly, but since this is what they do, you just have to have a beam that runs from the floor to the ceiling surrounding an area where you go in and mix drinks, and that's a room. And that's to give these restaurateurs the flexibility to be able to dispense in their operation. It also indicates that we ought to just be rid of the dispensing room requirement. But when you pick up page 9, subparagraph F, and I hope this applies to something other than restaurant, but I'm reading it as applying to restaurants, for purposes of this section, room means, as approved by the local licensing authority, a part of the inside of a building large enough for a person to enter but not a cabinet, which is divided from other areas by walls and a doorway that has its own floor and ceiling. That looks like a step backwards to me. In the case of one of these restaurateurs in Sheridan, in fact, his dispensing room is a refrigerator. Liquor Commission gave him that much flexibility under this law to simply say, because it's a very small place, this refrigerator that's back beside the grill, that'll be your dispensing room. And so with that, he was able to offer beer and wine to his customers. So I certainly hope that there's a reason for subparagraph F being there other than applying it to restaurants, and that I'm not even sure why F is there given the desire to be rid of dispensing rooms. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to address the good senator's questions. And unfortunately, I really don't have good news for him in achieving what he would like. The problem is, Mr. Chairman, is that there is a type of license called a restaurant license, and it's different than a bar and grill license, and it's different than a full retail license. So the difference is that your bar and grill licenses and your retail licenses, they're affected by the population formula that we've heard a lot about. And those requirements have been eased up in past years, but they still are covered by that. Those licenses are where the dispensing room language that's relevant to this bill has traditionally applied. And the good senator has made an example. It's in those cases, there is currently a dispensing room on your license, and it's, you know, and those rooms are investigated, and they have to be separate in a way from the rest of the location, and they're on your license, but there really is just the fiction or appearance of a room sometimes. Literally, posts like this can be, I'm not supposed to use props, but there might be a post here, can be used to define an area where the alcohol is kept. It's in view of the public. That's with those types of licenses. It includes the resort license, which I own part of, the retail liquor license, and the bar and grill license. The restaurant license is a different animal, Mr. Chairman. The restaurant license is not affected by population formulas. So any restaurant can obtain a restaurant license, which allows them to serve alcohol to their patrons. There is a requirement that they also serve food, and I believe there's a requirement about how much is food and how much is alcohol. But the key with that license is that dispensing room is more like a closet, and it's not in view of the public. Now, they can serve all the same things, and I think there's even a type of wine and beer license, too, that's sometimes restricted, Mr. Chairman. But they can serve alcohol in the same manner, but they have to go back to the room to get the alcohol. And it's very similar to what used to be very prevalent in our neighboring state of Utah, Mr. Chairman, where really the idea is that I suppose it goes back to a family atmosphere, but the crux in our law is it's not affected by the population formula. Any restaurant can apply to their local licensing authority and receive this license. But it does not have the dispensing room open to the public. So this bill, and indeed this right, this bill, this is under the restaurant license section, and the discussion about pages 8 and 9 are under restaurant licenses. And indeed, we're still keeping that old-fashioned dispensing room and putting some requirements that it actually be a room, a small room, where they go mix the liquor. If you did not differentiate between the restaurant license and the other licenses, and you allow the restaurants, for example, to construct a dispensing room like anybody else that was open to the public, et cetera, then there would be virtually no difference between that license and the licenses that are restricted by population. That would be a policy move, but that would be way above and beyond what the committee undertook in reworking the definition of dispensing rooms. So, Mr. Chairman, I hope that's helpful. I would also commend my good friend from Cheyenne who presented this bill, and I'm saving his cold a little bit, I hope, and happy to answer any questions along with my good colleague.
Any further questions? Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I have to admit to some confusion because I had turned to my friend from Cheyenne while he was presenting it and my friend from Bags on the left, and both said the whole intention was to get rid of the dispensing room requirement for restaurants. Now we find that we're actually tightening down on it. No? Oh, you want to tighten? That was the intent. All right. Well, super. And then I would ask why. Why, if we want a healthy restaurant business in a tourist state like Wyoming, would we make it so difficult for restaurants to serve beer and wine by actually tightening up or even having a dispensing room requirement? It confuses me. I totally get that it's not controlled by population, which in my mind is a good thing. I'd like somebody to enlighten me as to why we want to restrict restaurants from being able to serve a drink with a meal in this fashion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case, do you have a response?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this doesn't change anything with regards to whether a restaurant can serve a drink or not. And it doesn't change that part of the law. So, yes, restaurants can have a liquor license called a restaurant license, and they can serve alcohol, but they cannot have a bar, an open bar, where people can go and you know. So basically the person that has to take your order, go back to the room, and either pick up the prepackaged alcohol or mix a drink, Mr. Chairman. But that is the way it is now. And those are unlimitedly available. And it's kind of a delicate balance between folks in the liquor industry that have a license that is a population-based license, and there are different types of those. I mentioned them earlier. And these types of licenses, which are not population-based and are available to any restaurant tour who wants to apply and successfully receive one from the local licensing authority. The law, we're changing the law with respect to all the other licenses. Now the dispensing room is, you're not, it's any place in the building, Mr. Chairman. But the big effect doesn't change. Nothing changes about the number of licenses in any category. It just says that on your particular license, you're not restricted if you have a bar and grill license to serving in that bar and grill area or having that be restricted. That's up to the local licensing authority now under this bill, Mr. Chairman. So it is flexibility. Now, if you want to change the number of licenses available or change the conditions by which restaurants can participate in their licenses and whether they can have a bar or not, that's a separate issue and should be a separate bill. And there are people that say there shouldn't be any population restrictions on the number of bars. Fair enough discussion. And I want to point out, in my license, Mr. Chairman, it's a resort license, so it's based on the type of building I have. I don't come under the population formula, so I don't have a dog in that fight. But I would tell you that's a different discussion to have, and one that the committee didn't do.
Senator Ellis. I'll get you
started on here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to declare a conflict of interest.
I misquoted. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to add to what a good committee chairman just said regarding the dispensing rooms. When we removed the dispensing rooms out of Article 2, it removed it for all licenses. And so all we're doing with that little on page 9 is we're not making it any more there's no additional requirements. It's the same requirement. We're just putting it back in. Since we removed it for all licenses, we're putting it back in now for the restaurant license. Okay? Because it came out of the section, it was a requirement for every license. Well, since we took it out of all the licenses except the restaurant license, we had to put that language back in. But it's not any more onerous than it's been.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I had a bar 30 years ago, and so I'm quite familiar with this whole setup. And what, in fact, we have, the good senator from Lander is right. We have a population base, and this is a policy question. So the first question that comes around is why we continue to have these population-based number of licenses, because what it's become is basically a protection racket on the part of the state. The state restricts the number of liquor licenses, and the people who hold those licenses lobby very heavily against ever expanding any of the number of them. And can you think of any other business in the state where the state actually comes in and says, you can only have so many of these. You can only have so many shoe stores. You can only have so many clothing stores. Yet with the liquor license, it just stays set. And what's happened is with the retail liquor licenses is that we even give them the authority to dictate who is going to get the next license. So if I want to open a bar somewhere and I want to get a liquor license, I have to go to somebody who has one, and I will usually pay them anywhere between $125,000 and $300,000 for the service of recommending me to the licensing authority, to the town or to the county. That's what this thing has become. And if you ever want to expand the number of liquor licenses, one of the arguments that the current license holders make is, hey, I spent $200,000 on my license. That's my retirement. And if you expand the number of liquor licenses, you're going to dilute the value of it and hurt me. And so it's a corner that we've painted ourselves into. That being said, getting back to this bill itself, I think my fellow senator from Sheridan has a good question. Why do you have a dispensary? Why is the pouring of alcohol in a restaurant sinful or somehow, who is it hurting? But according to this bill, we have decided to reassert the dispensing room, and you're not allowed to pour alcohol or a beer within sight of your patrons. And I'm trying to figure out why. You can't even have a window in there in which they can see you pour? It doesn't make sense. And I think that particular paragraph that was pointed out by the senator from District 22 is ripe for amendment, if not elimination.
If I could, for the record, it was Senator Anselmi Dalton that declared a conflict, not Senator Ellis, that I'm aware of anyway. Go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I would also like to declare a conflict. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, my colleagues from Sheridan County raise a good point overall, but having participated as a member of the interim committee on this and having watched this over the years, I remember when I first came in, one of Speaker Morton's objectives was to open up the liquor business so that we could have more variety and better quality in the restaurant business in the state. And we had pointed our predecessors, painted us into a corner at the end of Prohibition. And we're dealing with a 1935 law that greatly restricted the number of licenses because it was a major segment of the population at that time that bluntly believed that the liquor business was sinful, and if we couldn't prohibit it, which they had gotten done and it didn't work, we ought to at least restrict it. So we had a very restrictive formula, and those licenses became quite valuable. And if the legislature would have tried to remove all the restrictions on those licenses, we would have taken quite a number of citizens who were respected in the community, who had invested a lot of money in obtaining a liquor license, because you could buy them, and impoverished them, and impoverished maybe some of their lenders, too. So what has happened over time, Mr. Chairman, is we have gradually developed, we've liberalized the formula, we have developed a number of different categories of liquor license that 40 years ago were not present in this state. You know, the bar and grill license, that's a relatively new addition. The resort license, that's a relatively new addition. The restaurant license, and that came in as a separate license with its own formula, and then we removed the formula and made it widely available. So we have gradually eroded over time the monopoly, which we could do because it didn't hurt the people that had the existing licenses. We could do it gradually. But especially with the restaurant and liquor license numbers being unlimited, if you were to change that, and the feeling was that if you were to remove the dispensing room requirement from the liquor license, you essentially had a bar and grill license that was unlimited, and you would destroy the value, the extra economic value of those licenses. And that would make this bill quite controversial, and maybe you could pass it and maybe you couldn't. So this bill came to us, a combination of work from the liquor division and the association involved, trying to get rid of some of the things that were just irrational and that weren't serving any useful purpose. And we hit the complication of the restaurant license, and because of its unlimited nature, if you transform that into what was effectively the same thing as a bar and grill license, you'd then hurt a bunch of people economically and make it difficult to pass the bill with these corrections. So that's why the bill was structured the way it was, with the restaurant liquor license still intact and the dispensing requirement for that, so it couldn't be transformed into something that allowed a bar. Now, the testimony we had was that many of the restaurants have a full retail license, and so they will no longer be affected. But you will have this unlimited class that still has the complication of the dispensing room. And, Mr. Chairman, I would strongly urge the Senate not to remove that requirement for the restaurant license. It may be a sensible thing to do long term, but it should be, because it will engender the degree of opposition, because it's going to hurt some people. It would be something that we ought to do in a separate bill, with careful consideration being given, should there be some other restrictions or should there not. It really is a separate issue, and this is a long overdue effort to get rid of some of the restrictions we've got on the liquor business that really are a hangover from the history of prohibition. And, you know, prohibition was a very valuable thing, at least for my particular neighborhood.
Bootleggers.
My fellow ranchers up in Bates Hole in the 30s, and now mind you, this is hearsay, but it was a very profitable period, Mr. Chairman. They cut a deal with a certain soft drink bottler up in Sheridan to obtain sugar. They could pass off corn as cattle feed. And there were no paved roads and wide spaces and not too much traffic. And if they saw a dust cloud coming that they couldn't identify and weren't expecting, they could make appropriate preparations to receive the revenues. And they were selling product clear to Los Angeles, and it was very profitable. But that sort of activity eventually caused the whole prohibition to just be a failure. But there's a history there, and we're trying to get rid of a part of the restrictions that came in with that history. But you've got to do it gradually, because if you don't do it gradually, you really do hurt some people. And for that reason, I think that dealing with the issue that's been raised about the dispensing rooms with the restaurant license really belongs in the second bill, because you will transform them into something that you could have, a full bar and grill, or you couldn't have a package store, but everything else that goes with a full liquor license. So I would urge the Senate to leave that portion of the bill alone.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The senator from Bates Creek does a good job of outlining the history, as does my colleague from Sheridan, on the liquor license reform, as we've called it. The first thing, I guess, that I would ask my colleague, either the bringer of the bill or the one from Bates Creek, the bringer of the bill stated that on page 9, subparagraph F, simply reincorporated an existing definition. And if that's the case, if somebody could point to me in statute where this language comes from, I'd greatly appreciate it. It looks to me to be a substantial change from the status quo, which, to borrow a phrase from my good friend from Bates Creek, helps create an economic moat, that is, protectionism, that it further restricts restaurant licenses and substantially changes the status quo against restaurant licenses. But if this existing definition is in statute now, I'd like to know about it. I agree this is a good bill. I want to see it move forward. The second part that I'd leave this thought to the body, I agree with the bill. I'd like to see it move forward, except I don't want to impair restaurant licenses further. But to that whole dynamic, the history of these liquor licenses, it's been one exactly of the retail liquor licensee that's paid $200,000 to $300,000 in a large community. And then public pressure grows and grows and grows and grows to do something. And the legislature finally is compelled to act. And it's been an incremental series of steps that tries to accommodate both the retail license holders' economic protection, because they're locked into a system not of their own making, but also recognizes that the whole system is just really broken, and that the demand outstrips the available supply of retail liquor licenses, because it flattens out as a community gets larger, the number of retail liquor licenses. So the resort license was born when I believe somewhere in I believe it was in the Grand Tetons, that community we all love, where a retail liquor license hit $1 million. And this is 40 years ago, when $1 million was much, substantially much more money than it is now. That created such huge public pressure that the retail liquor dealers, as a rear guard action, authorized resort licenses. And then there was so much pressure for the bar and grills that the legislature finally acted and opened those up. There was so much pressure for restaurants that they opened up the restaurants, but in deference at the time to the retail liquor license holders, created this dispensing room requirement to hamper restaurant operations as much as possible. Over time, that's been diluted somewhat. It's still not ideal, but we certainly cannot go backwards. But I agree, a restaurant liquor license should not be thrown wide open and just turn it into a bar. So I'll check with LSO and see if we can find some models from other states legislation that creates sort of a reasonable balance here. But further restricting licenses in the restaurants is not that reasonable balance. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, response to question. If you look on 12.1.101, which is the general definition section, section XV, room means an enclosed and partition space within a building large enough for a person to enter, but not a cabinet. Partitions may contain windows and doorways, but any partition shall extend from floor to ceiling. This definition is quite similar, except we have added the words as approved by the local licensing authority to give some more local control in that. Mr. Chairman, just in case anybody missed, the citation is 12.1.101A.XV.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation that Senate File 45 as amended do pass, all say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 45 as amended has passed Committee of the Whole. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise to beg and leave and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Leave it on. Just leave the mic on. Okay, good. Ellen, do you have the script? It's already in here. It's taken out of their way. That you can throw away. The Committee of the Whole is here. We have the reading, corrections, and approval of the journal.
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January 17, 2017 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Bouchard, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Leader, Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. Do you have a motion for me? I bet you want your microphone on, too. Thank you. That's the first question. Thank you. The second question, or the second issue, Mr. Vice President, is that I move that we stand in recess until 2 p.m. Actually, let's make that 2:30 p.m.
Is there announcements? Senator Case.
Mr. Vice President, your Committee Number 7 Corporations will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to consider the following bills. We're going to keep considering Senate File 44, Speech Pathology and Audiology. Then we'll start on our work on Special Districts, Senate File 15, Special District Budget Requirements, Senate File 16, Special District Elections, and Senate File 18, Special Districts Public Records, BOCES. Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Vice President, two announcements from the Minerals Committee. The Minerals Committee will meet 15 minutes after noon recess today in Joan Room S18 to review SF0092, Local Governments Plan Review Authority. One more from the Joint Minerals Committee will meet Thursday, January 19th, upon adjournment in Joan Room L54 to review of the Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality. Thank you.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your Travel Committee Number 6 will meet tomorrow, Thursday, January 19th at 8 a.m. in Jonah Room S27 to consider Senate File 86, Game and Fish Permits, Senate File 90, Allocation of Complementary Hunting Licenses.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number two, appropriations, will meet at 12:30 in about 10 minutes to continue markups on the budget bill. We will also meet upon adjournment today. We will also meet at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning and upon lunch tomorrow and upon adjournment tomorrow to, again, work on markups on the budget. And I would appreciate it from the other members if you let your friendly JEC member jump in front of you on the line for the lunch, because we only have about 10 minutes to get down there. Thank you.
You're working hard. Thank you. Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Health Facilities Task Force, the meeting Thursday, January 19th, 7 a.m., room S19.
Thank you. Any other announcements? Senator Meyer, do you have anything for us? You meet upon adjournment today?
Mr. Vice President, yeah. Transportation Committee number 8 will meet upon adjournment in S-27 to consider the following bills. Senate File 19, Snow Plows, that's Senator Emmerich. Senate File 38, Veteran License Plates, Stickers Repeal. Senate File 64, Accident Report Confidentiality, you, Mr. Vice President, and Senate File 74, Vehicle Registration Fees, Depreciation Period, and that's Senator Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The Senate will stand recess until 2:30 this afternoon. I want to